You will no longer stand between me and my destiny.
But I will.
And the masters of the universe. I am Adam, Prince of Eternia and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic sword and said,
by the power of Grayskull!
Became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, and Orko. Together, we defend Castle Grayskull from the evil forces of Skeletor.
Welcome to another episode of I Have the Power, a He-Man podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Steven. Steven, how's it going?
It's going very well, Adam. Very nice and sunny here in the UK.
Same here. And if I was Skeletor, I'd call you a boob, because that's one of his insults. one which I quite enjoy. But I'm not
Skeletor. I'm a wonder boob, He-Man. Get me cringing there for you.
Well, and I it's funny because you know that Alan Oppenheimer did both the voice of Skeletor and Cringer and Merman, and so yeah.
And he's Mossman in the new one, Revelation. Yeah. So.
which there's of course we haven't heard when it's coming, but I can't wait for it.
Yeah, so I might as well just say we've got no news now. I've trolled the internet and I couldn't find any news.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. There was a situation where, I mean, we could just mention it real quickly. Some troll website, it might have been We Got Discover or Cosmic Book News, one of those shit sites, was basically trolling Kevin Smith, or they posted an article suggesting that.
Yeah.
It was going to be quote-unquote woke because...
I was going to bring this up, actually, funnily enough, yeah.
Yeah, because apparently Teela is the star of the show and He-Man is not. And so they were criticizing that. And
Hasn't he said that that's not the case as well?
Yeah, he called them out and said, no, I think I would know because I've seen all the scripts. And He-Man is actually at the forefront of the show.
But like, what are they even basing off? Because we know nothing. I think we got that plot synopsis, didn't we?
You know how these people, We Got These Covered in the Cosmic Book News are. They think they got sources. The sources are in their head, and they just spew whatever crap they want.
Sources are in the cupboards.
Yeah, we know somebody with a cupboard out, but who knows what's in there? But that's a different podcast. But but we're eagerly awaiting that. News on that show in terms of a release date. I mean, August will be a year that the announcement was made. So usually animation takes about a year and a half to, from the time it's announced to the time you see the product. So hopefully, and we know they've been able to work on it because you don't need to have the actors all in one room to do all the entire process. And
I think the voice work had already been done as well, hasn't it?
Right, yeah, so they are working on it, but hopefully soon we'll hear some news. I like to think that what Netflix's plan is they'll probably air the new Transformers animated series that they have first, and then while that's airing they'll probably announce details on Master of the Universe.
Might have to check that out.
Yeah,
that
I saw the trailer. That looks really good. So, I'm definitely gonna be watching that as well. But we'll keep you posted on all the He-Man news when there is news, specifically with both animated series, and crossing fingers the live action film. But that's not why we're here.
Well, we could have been from like no He-Man content, apart from the old stuff, to lots of He-Man content. So we won't be overrun.
Yeah, once we get going, I think we're gonna have a lot more episodes to report of the show.
Yeah, definitely.
In less time in between each episode, because I think we're gonna get an influx of news once we start getting news. But in the meantime, what we decided to do today was we're gonna take a break from the original animated series for the next couple episodes, because this week we're going to do the first two issues of the 2013, I want to say, crossover comic between DC Universe versus the Masters of the Universe. Spot on. What's that?
November 2013, spot on.
See, there we go. It came out a few months after Man of Steel, a long time ago. But so we're going to review the first two episodes of that, and we're going to look at a fan film from 2016 called The Fall of Grayskull,
Yeah, but we're going to do an episode of animated series, aren't we, until you suggested that. So
yeah, we were going to cover the animated series, but then I came across that and I said, "Oh, why don't we watch this and talk about it?"
Yeah, definitely, it's good.
And so that's what we decided to do. So that's the content of the episode today. Get some popcorn and drink ready, or whatever you do when you listen to the show, and get ready to join in on the fun and hear what we have to say on all this good stuff. So. Let's start with the comic book, shall we?
Yeah. So we're doing the first two issues, we said, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we said I didn't read them both for nothing, did I?
No, you read the right amount.
So yeah, so we've got DC Universe versus Masters of the Universe, which, as you said, was November 2013. Writer was Keith Giffen, penciler Dexter Soy. He also did the inkings and colorings as well.
Yeah.
No point really going into all of the stuff, is there? I haven't got like a synopsis, because the synopsis is so long. I didn't want to read the whole the whole thing out. But long story short, you've obviously got something going on in Eternia, and Skeletor's made his way to Earth, hasn't he? And he discovers the Justice League, and then he's up to something, isn't he? But we don't quite know what at this point. I think it's going to be revealed as the issues wear on.
Yeah.
So don't you want to just dive in?
Yeah, let's do it.
I've got a summary on the DC Universe app. DC Comics app, not DC Universe. Thank God.
Yeah, I was going to say, what DC Universe app are you using? Did it suddenly become available in the UK?
So it says, after narrowly escaping his last battle with He-Man, Skeletor has fled to the most unexpected realm to recover, the DC Universe. So this actually follows on from another comic, doesn't it, that I haven't read?
Yeah, which I should have suggested we did first, but, you know. Why would we go in order? We'll just do that at some other time. It's a really good book. I do recommend we look at it at some point. But yeah, definitely. It doesn't directly... I mean, if you read it afterwards, you're not going to be like, oh, shit, I missed a huge...
Yeah, well, he's explained in the issue anyway.
Yeah, we won't be too much at a loss, or you won't. I've read it already, but it was good. So we will revisit it. It's kind of like an origin it sets up the new status quo in the DC Universe version of He-Man. So that it's important.
Yeah.
At some point.
And this is the new 52 universe, isn't it, as well? Because of
course. Yeah, on the DC side of things, yes. But I got to say, you know, as a fan of both of these properties, like, this book was a must-buy when I heard about it the first time around. I mean, this scratches the itch of my, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-old self just by the title alone. I mean,
yeah.
It's two of my favorite properties coming together, and you know, before, you know, like I said, before we discovered that crossover that we did with Superman and He-Man.
Yeah.
I think it was our first episode.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, before I discovered that, the idea of, if you would have told me a few years ago, even like before this miniseries came about the possibility of crossing over He-Man with the DC superheroes, I would have been like, well, how's that going to work? You know, like it doesn't, it doesn't necessarily feel like it would mesh. And yet here we are, and it works perfectly. Like it just, it's like.
Yeah. Do you think as well, though, because they obviously introduced John Constantine, which in the story, it kind of, he almost is kind of that glue that brings it all together because he's with.
Yeah, because you need some magical
yeah,
kind of tool or instrument to kind of tie them together.
I just first want to say how beautiful the art is, and how I like the distinction between the art when it's in the DC universe and like with the, you know, the.
Yeah, it's the same artist, but he's able to.
He's like done like a little bit of a different style, like the way the sky is and stuff as well, like the
yeah,
little bit of a rougher edge to the He-Man.
It's very much He-Man like bear. it's more of a, when you hit the DC universe, it's more of your typical superhero style.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're in Eternia, it's more. It looks more like a Conan.
Yeah, yeah, that's, I think that's a perfect analogy.
You know, kind of experience, which makes sense. And it's funny, I noticed it on the second read. So, you know, I had read this years ago, but reading it again, I'm like, wait a minute, because in issue 2, I'm like, hold on a second. The art style is a little different. So I went back to the cover and I'm like, not the same guy.
Hmm.
Like, he's just that good that he's capable of altering his style. Cool.
It really works as well, because when obviously, which we'll get to later, when the two styles meet, it doesn't feel unnatural. It actually feels quite natural.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't throw me off of out of the book at all, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, I'll admit, when I first started reading, I was a bit confused what was going on, but I think you're not supposed to know what's happening at this point, are you? So
I think it puts you in a position of the characters, really, because even the characters themselves.
I mean, and I don't know, you obviously read what came before. Did they reveal what? Because obviously it's his mother that's on the on Earth, which is from Earth herself, isn't she?
Right, yes.
Is that leading from that comic to something happening that, and she like disappears? Or
I think, keep in mind it's been years, but I know Skeletor gets away. It doesn't necessarily say where he's going.
Yeah.
It alludes to the fact that he's gone to another world, but it doesn't specify that it's the DC universe.
Right, okay. I did wonder, yeah.
That's why I'm saying it's not, like, the biggest thing you'll get from when we do cover that other one, the prequel to this, is you'll get a sense of Marlena being gone. And Skeletor.
Oh, okay.
And you'll understand that point where He-Man is talking about how Skeletor had taken away their memories, and so that's explored quite heavily in that prequel miniseries, that Origins miniseries. So you'll get a lot of that, which is cool.
Didn't you think Stratos looked better in this than it does in the cartoon?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, put that mouth covering on, it just makes such a big difference.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And, you know, Dexter Soy's art somehow makes Skeletor look even more menacing. I mean, he looks like already, but that artwork is just, man, he's such an imposing figure.
There's something I wanted to ask you then, because basically He-Man's very open about being Prince Adam in this, and even his look, I think he looks a little bit more Prince Adam than He-Man in terms of how the cartoons and the cover comics have read. So at this point, is it like almost like a Professor Hulk situation where they've become one, or is it just now everyone knows, or
I think he can. He can. He still changes back in, like with the use of the sword.
Yeah. But okay.
If I remember, now I could be wrong, but it's either in this book or the previous one, where his father finds out that.
Ah, okay. So is that how his mother? Because his mother doesn't know in the cartoon, does she, that he's He-Man? Oh, she doesn't let on anyway.
No, from what we're told, she doesn't know. But I think in this, it's pretty explicitly obvious that she knows.
She should know because he looks like him.
And he says, "Mother, it's some strange."
Well, she knows. She definitely knows in this book. Yeah.
Yeah, because if some strange muscle-bound man is calling a random woman mother, it's either Steppenwolf or something's going on here.
What did you think to his like interactions with Teela early on? Because He-Man seems very uncomfortable around her. I found reading it.
You know what, the banter between them, the sort of attitude and the snark.
Yeah,
you can. It's there's animosity, but they feel like two. And this is not a derogatory way of saying it, but it feels like imagine when there's two kids that like each other, but they don't want to admit it.
Yeah, so I got that feeling.
They act mean or antagonistic towards each other. That's what it reminded me of. And I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I liked it. I felt Tira was a complete badass in this, actually.
They make her
up. She's a badass in the cartoon, in all honesty. But in this, like, especially with the dialogue and stuff, she seemed like you won't want to mess with her.
In this, she's even more... like, she's very capable in the cartoon, and they do a very good job of... And that's what I got to give credit to the Masters of the Universe as a brand, is that they're very good at making women powerful and strong and independent.
Yeah.
In their own right. And they do that in the cartoon with Teela and She-Ra.
Yeah.
And so they've always done it. It's always been a franchise that's been able to do a good job at that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And they're very much... you know, ahead of their time with that in the early 80s, that's kind of unheard of, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
But in this comic, I think, you know, obviously they don't have her cursing and swearing. Well, they do, but they blurt it out. But you know, I think a little bit more of the restraints are off because it's a comic book.
Yeah.
And it's going into the DC universe, so you can go a little bit further. And they do take full advantage of being able to go a little bit further in this issue.
So basically, Man at Arms is wanting to get one of these, what I think looks like mother boxes, intact because they keep getting destroyed. That was the plan, wasn't it? So the one they find in the open has got Evelyn in it, which is like attached to it somehow. It's all a bit weird. So in my head, I'm thinking, well, were the other ones and they had people attached to them and they got destroyed? Is that what we're supposed to believe? Because assuming the people died, it were trapped.
Well, they're leading you in a direction. I can't say that I remember what, like, the weird thing is I've read it so long ago that it's all new to me again. So
yeah, if you start reading it for the first time again.
The basic things are coming back, but you know the finer plot details are still have become a mystery to me because I haven't read it in so long.
Yeah.
But that's what it. But the little bits that they're giving you, it seems to. Be leading you in that direction.
Right, got you. So, Skeletor, then, he's with, is it Alice Black she's called?
I'm not sure who that was. I was never sure. Who did they announce?
Yeah, let me just check on the website. Pretty sure she's called Alice Black.
So,
Black Alice, not Alice Black. Black Alice. I'm she's some sort of like.
Is she related to Manchester Black?
I assume she's something. She's obviously a magic based character.
Yeah, but I don't recall her in the comics.
Right, I'm looking at her on DC fandom. So apparently, her real name is Laurie Zecklin. She's part of the Secret Six.
Oh, okay, yeah, I have no idea who she is, but I guess she's in the comics. Yeah.
By Gail Simone, Ed Benes, first appearing in Birds of Prey 76.
Oh, all right.
Oh, there's a Secret Six volume, like series.
I had no idea who she was.
Okay, so she's a part of some, she's obviously into the dark arts, and she's part of like a team of supervillains who conjure up magic and stuff. So, because I was a bit confused with, I almost thought Skeletor was doing something to her unwillingly, but maybe, but it can't have been, can it? Because she seems quite willing to help him.
She seems to be going along with it. Yeah. Oh, definitely. She's not doing it against her will. That's for sure.
Right.
But I find it interesting at how, you know, now it's true that Evelyn is partly using Hema and Tila and them to you know get what she wants and you know get closer to Skeletor. But the idea that the situation on Eternia is so bad that you know Evelyn is willing to team up with Hema and Tila,
yeah,
shows you how screwed up the situation is.
Yeah.
and that's another thing that I really liked was the banter between Evelyn and Marlena.
Do you mean Taylor?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
Taylor, yeah.
No. There was a scene with Marlena as well where.
Isn't that in the next issue, though?
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry, I'm jumping.
Yeah, on. But I know what you're saying, but it's just kind of got that feeling like
I'll get back there when...
We should have done them both as one, and then we could have...
yeah, I'll get back. Remind me to touch on that again when we get there. But I really like that in the scenes where John Constantine is introduced to Marlena and stuff, and they're going back and forth about how, you know, in Eternia, apparently John Constantine is like this mythic figure.
Yeah, that was so cool. Yeah, I really liked that.
And vice versa, in the DC universe,
Marlena even Skeletor says, "Don't he? He didn't think he was real either." He sort of says a comment, didn't he?
Yeah, Skeletor was even surprised.
Yeah, that was quite cool.
So like I said, all that exposition that we got was really cool, and it you know, usually sometimes if done poorly, exposition can be a drag on the plot.
It's like the Bond villain in it explaining the plot type thing. Yeah.
But here, I think it really sort of advances the story, and it's necessary because, like I said, if you've never read the prequel,
yeah,
and just being, let's say you're a fan of one of the two properties, and you just see this cover on a comic stand and say, "Oh my god, this looks cool, I'll pick it up." You have to have some kind of context for both universes to get your bearings, and the exposition is very well done and really sets you up to feel like, even if this is your first time reading either universe, if it feels like you've been reading for a long time, the way they tell the story. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I like the fact that, you know, they talk about the Horde and how we get a small sort of sense of the lay of the land in Eternia with the Horde is taken over.
Yeah.
There's even a small mention of She-Ra because Tila He-Man's like, the Horde is, you know, taking control of Eternia, and Tila's like, yeah, thanks to your sister. So So there's even, you know, a nod to She-Ra, which is cool. But yeah, like I said, I think it really sets up the you know, the lay of the land of both universes really well. It's a really well done.
Yeah, for me, I feel like John Constantine can put a story comic when he came into it because his dialogue's brilliant.
Oh, he's hilarious, yeah.
And the bit where Marlena basically says who she is, the warrior queen of Eternia, and he's like, well, if you'd led with that.
I wouldn't have picked a fight with you if you had led with that.
Yeah. It's just like... But he's so Constantine in it because he's like, he can basically almost talk his way out of anything. So.
Oh yeah, but I love that he's such a smart ass, basically, right?
Oh yeah, I was reading it in Thingy's voice as well from
Matt Ryan.
Yeah, Matt Ryan. I just hear his voice when I hear Constantine now, because I'm like, that's Constantine's voice now. It does do it in like everything, doesn't it? Now, so
yeah, but it helps because you have an accent, so you can like you already.
Yeah,
have,
that's true.
I can already have you there. When I read it, it just sounds like me. It's like shit. It's so
good. Yeah, all the characters, even the females.
Yeah, it's like wait. Tina's not that attractive when she sounds like me.
I've got a question about the end, right?
Yeah, of the first issue, yeah.
I got confused because she was, Evelyn was always trying to talk him, keep him talking so she could do this incantation or whatever. Or enchantment, she says, doesn't she?
Yeah.
So she could blindside him. Now, this to me seems like she wanted to get them on Earth, but then at the same time, it were almost like, why weren't they willing to go to Earth if they knew that's where they had to go to solve the problem? That's what confused me.
Well, there was some resistance because they knew that King Randor wouldn't go for that.
All right, and they obviously don't trust Evelyn and stuff as well. That makes sense.
Yeah, so it was like the double-edged sword. Well, A, we don't trust her. B, you know, He-Man was the one that was more resistant. But like, you know, I don't think we should.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Tila's like, you know, we have to or whatever. So you know, the resistance comes from the fact that so it's understandable from those two points of view why there would be some resistance. But I mean, let's face it, we knew pretty.
Yeah, of course we did.
Early on, that they were going there. It's not a.
Yeah.
it's no secret.
And as much as I love the 1987 film, this is a much better reason for him to come to Earth. I think than in that film. Because that, it was almost like they just wanted to get him to Earth and they can, whereas this, it's like the natural story. More of a story reason than just, we need to escape. Where can we go? Right, this place will do.
they have an actual reason to be on Earth.
Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say, don't you? Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So, have you got anything else to say about this issue before I move on to issue two?
No, it was a good setup issue. It lays the story out really well, and you know, it makes it easy for the reader to.
It's pretty much set up, isn't it, the first one? Because
correct me if I'm wrong. We don't see the Justice League at all in the first issue, correct?
Only when that Black Alice.
Yeah, when she we see a picture.
Of her. Green Lantern's called. She calls him.
Yeah, green something or other.
Green bean or something. Yeah. Green jeans or something. Like that. Yeah.
We only see them via picture, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it though. And you're one of the other DC characters there. Is it Madame
Xanadu? Yeah,
Xanadu and John Constantine. That's it.
And I like how she always comments about his smoking.
Yeah,
she's like, "Good Lord, he's lighting up another one."
Do you know what? John Constantine is one of those characters. As a kid, I don't think I'd have really cared for him, but as an adult, I just absolutely love him.
Of course, yeah, I agree with that. And
but as a kid, he just looks like a guy in a trench coat, doesn't he? Where when you're older, you kind of think that looks cool. Or when you're younger, you probably don't think it looks that.
Yeah, but the cool thing is, when you're older, you have a better understanding of the kind of evil that he fights. And so it's...
Yeah, exactly.
It's geared for an adult, more of an adult reader. Like if you give a four-year-old the vertical version of John Constantine, you're going to traumatize the angels, demons. He's having sex with a demon. I mean, this is not the shit that you want to give your four-year-old. So, yeah, but I absolutely agree with that. And
should we rate it at the end or do you want to rate it now?
It's up to you. Honey. You want to rate in the...
Should we just rate it now? Because we're going to do it each issue at a time. Yeah, what do you think of the cover art, by the way?
Oh, I love the cover. The fact that it was a dual, the idea of it being a dual cover.
Yeah, so cool, yeah.
Where you could, you know, you... So basically, you have to get two copies because...
Unless you buy it digitally.
Of course.
And you've gone both.
But physically, you have to...
which is clever from DC, I think, to do So out of five, and so what would you rate the cover art and then the book itself?
The cover art is a five. I love the cover.
Yeah.
The story, a lot of setup, nothing really wrong with it that I can say that I didn't like. So I'll give it a four.
I'm exactly the same. Five cover art, four star. Yeah. And it isn't like it's not. It doesn't lose a point because it's bad. It just doesn't get a point because it doesn't. It's just getting you there, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
Right. So issue two of DC Universe versus Master of the Universe. The summary says, Skeletor is on the loose in the DC Universe. If He-Man and the Master of the Universe can't stop him, then how can the Justice League hope to? So. Okay.
That's a fair description.
At this point now, He-Man and Co. are on Earth.
Yeah.
With Marlena. This is what got me. So, John Constantine, and he goes along what's happening, doesn't he? Evil-Lyn says, oh, let's do this. And he's like, all right. But she's not doing something bad. This is what confused me, because they all seem to ready to fight, and the next thing you know, they're just kind of letting them do what they're doing.
Yeah. It's kind of like, well, you just finished saying you didn't trust her.
Yeah.
But because John Constantine is there, you're going to be like, all right, cool. I guess it's because He-Man saw that his mother was going along with John Constantine. So he's like, well, she thinks he's all right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I guess I'll go along with it.
Yeah, see what she's doing. By the way, how big is He-Man's sword, by the way?
Well, we'll have to ask. We'll have to ask.
That's what she said.
Yeah, or at least I think he'd like us to be able to ask Tito. That means she would have seen it. But no, it's an impressive sword, right? Like I like that when you see the sword that has weight to it, and it has a bit of, you know, size to it as well. I mean, the thing about the toy sword. When you got it with the toy, because it had to match the size of the toy, it had to be small, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, this is a power sword. It doesn't look very, you know. In the cartoon, it was different because he had, you know, it matched the size of the.
Yeah.
Of the drawing of the character, right? And I really liked the look of the sword in the live action film.
Yeah, that was cool. Do you know what though? I would love it if the new film had the original design. From the cartoon.
Of the sword, yeah. I wanted to mimic that, yeah.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But obviously this is where we get you Marlena having a little dig at Evil-Lyn. What you were talking about.
Yes, earlier. This is what I was talking about. Where she's like, oh yeah, so you're here for Skeletor. He's with somebody, he's found somebody else. She's younger and prettier than you.
And that's not saying much. That's what got me.
It's the last thing saw. And then I like the fact that I think it was Madame Xanadu that asked, is this Skeletor is your boyfriend? And he's like, Skeletor, she's like, Evil-Lyn's like, Skeletor has many things, but I can assure you, he's not a boy or a friend.
So obviously Skeletor breaks.
Oh, by the way, I like John Constantine. Did you guys have your cat fight on your own?
Yeah, about where he came from.
I'm like, shut up, John. Just enjoy the show.
The first shot of the Justice League we see in the art when we go to the Justice League satellite, as they call it in the comic, they all look so badass. Like the shadings and the colors and the way Superman's like S, you know. Sticks out and stuff. And then there's that line we talked about off air about
Superman's ass, He-Man's sword.
The innuendo podcast. But like Skeletor is like, oh brave new world that has such people in it, and Flash is like, what is that? Shakespeare is like, oh, I am no shaker of spears, now I'm after
him. I had a glass of water. As I'm reading, I spit it out, I couldn't stop laughing.
Absolutely brilliant, but I like the Like you were talking about how Skeletor looks in this. It looks so cool.
Yeah.
It's like a different look, but it's still Skeletor. It doesn't
like look this good. Would be, yeah, and I'm not saying this, you all, everybody knows I've done a 180 on Zack Snyder. So I'm not saying this in a joking or derogatory manner. If Zack Snyder did Skeletor, he'd look like this.
Yeah, do you know what? It's funny, I was thinking earlier, how cool would it be if Zack Snyder did a Master of the Universe film?
Well, I said that back in the memory.
But how cool would it be, cool, wouldn't it, looking?
I just started laughing because he thought I was joking, and I'm like, no, I'm dead, serious.
No, but he would do it. It wouldn't be for kids, but he'd do a good job of it.
Yeah, he'd be like, wait a minute. This has to be PG-13, shit. No, but...
You know, man pulling Skeletor's head off his neck or something.
I mean, no, but I wouldn't, honestly, God, think about it now that you mentioned it. Hear me out. I'm sure you could convince Zack Snyder to do a PG-13 that was...
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
But I would like to imagine Masters of the Universe film in the style of 300. How amazing would that look?
Oh, yeah, that would be cool, actually.
And it would be a little cheaper, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Just think about it. He made 300 for about, what, 70, 65, 70 million dollars?
Did he? Is that all it was? That's cheap, isn't it?
Right, well, because think about it. Because
there's a lot of green screen and stuff on it, and yeah.
It's green screen, so you're not building sets. And
well, we didn't have to spend much on wardrobe, because guys were in pants and capes.
Yeah, but what would he be wearing? You're like, really?
Yeah.
One cloth, right? Yeah.
So... Superman kind of straight away is like, what are you trespassing for? And he gets his ass kicked in like 2 seconds.
Well, first of all, before we go there.
Oh, yeah, go on.
I just want to say that for all the people that back in the day bitched and moaned about the new 52 designs, they look fine here.
I tell you what, if you've got a problem with when you read this comic, you probably think they look absolutely fantastic because...
Like, look at the Flash, goddammit. Look how cool the Flash looks.
Yeah. They all do, really, don't they?
Yeah.
So, what makes me laugh is Superman gets his ass kicked, and instead of the Justice League jumping in, Wonder Woman's just like, you've got our attention now. I'm like, is Superman still down on the floor? But, just like talking to Skeletor.
But you know what I liked about this comic is that Skeletor says, you've got two weaknesses. One of them is magic. That makes you my plaything.
Yeah.
See, this Skeletor is smart because he's doing somewhere along the line. With, I guess that girl showed him more of the internet, and he's done some research via Wikipedia. So he knows that of Superman's weaknesses. Whereas in the 87 cartoon, he's like, oh yeah, we're gonna do this. And yeah. He's just gonna go for the black. We don't have to worry about He-Man because he's not gonna show up. And sure enough, He-Man shows up.
So, it'd be funny if it were lying like, and you're allergic to onions, and Superman's like, no, I'm not. And he's like, damn Wikipedia. Yeah.
No, but it seems like Skeletor's put a lot more planning into this plan than anything he ever did on the cartoon.
Oh, absolutely. Even in that previous comic we read, he's just like, he just craps himself at Superman, doesn't he? Tries to control him, and then next thing you know, he's absolutely bricking it and he runs off.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Skeletor unleashes these weird skeleton things, and Batman's like, teleport me now, because Batman is always the one that escaped. He's probably the smartest one, actually, because he's like, I'm not getting out of Dodge.
He's like, I'm getting the hell out of here. This is why I don't hang out with you people more often.
But we go back to Eternia and Man at Arms is with like Cringer and I don't know what that big robot.
By the way, I'm thumbing through the comic right now, and I just noticed Cringer's Battle Cat's.
Yeah, he's in Battle Cat at that point. So
his facial armor there. I didn't notice that the first time. Like, where's Battle Cat in all this?
Same thing, just going on now. Now, funnily enough, here's Moss Man, as we mentioned earlier, because Alan Oppenheimer's voice in
Revelation. Now, in the cartoon, he looks stupid, but here he looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, this is where you get a closer look up at Stratos as well, and he looks pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I assume they're going to make their way to Earth because they know where they've gone, don't they? At that point, I assume.
Well, yeah. But by the way, doesn't Stratos kind of look like the Spider-Man 2099, the Spider-Man
from... Yeah, it does actually. Yeah, that's a cool design as well, so yeah, that's not a knock, is it, either, so... Yeah. That's quite... So then, obviously... So Batman goes to Batcave, and He-Man and John Constantine are there.
Yeah.
And he's like, how'd you find the Batcave? And Constantine's like, I led him here.
He's like, I brought him here, I figured you wouldn't mind. You figured it wrong.
Yeah. You figured you might want to know 7 billion lives at stake. You figured wrong. Did you notice in the glass cases, one of the suits was the Batman Beyond? With the Batman Beyond symbol.
No, that's the Nightwing symbol.
Oh, is it Nightwing? What was Batman Beyond? Oh, sorry, I just don't say
that. Sure. Show us how many comics you've read, sir.
I thought it was blue.
No, that was it, but that yes.
That's actually Robin's suit from the Batman and Robin movie.
Stop that.
Which is 23 years old today.
Stop that, goddammit. I don't want to celebrate that anniversary of that piece of shit that ruined my childhood. Anyway, I was the child that was... How old was I? Wait a second.
So, obviously, we know 17 Superman...
17 years old, I wasn't a child.
Superman's vulnerable to magic, so he teleports down.
Yeah, no, but hold on. Before we get there, So, just to clear up your confusion, the reason why it's red is because the new 52 Nightwing, for whatever reason, right. had a red symbol on his suit. Right,
yeah.
The other thing is, good God, that Batcave looks beautiful. Jesus.
Oh, God, it does, yeah. It does remind me a little bit of the... of the Batman BVS one, but with the mixture of like the animated series and because you've obviously got the Tim Burton Batmobile and the Tumbler as well.
By the way, look at that 89 Batmobile. Oh. Look how beautiful that thing is.
Tumbler. Oh, Tumbler's cool. So
the Tumbler looks better in comic art than it does in the film for whatever reason. But yeah, and at the time of this comic, the Tumbler was the last live action Batmobile, so it makes sense.
So obviously the Justice League are possessed now.
And I like Evelyn, by the way, when she sees the dinosaur. Whoever he is, I like his style. That was a good one. and then Tila's there. Let's get out of here. I think he kills kids.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, with the thing in the suits in the. So the Justice League are possessed. Now, something I want to ask you, right? I think of all the superheroes, the hardest one to possess with his powers should be Green Lantern. Because for me, this is going to sound really like geekish, but should the ring still work if it's possessed? Because it should know something's not right, shouldn't it? Do you get my point?
I get your point, but the idea with the Green Lantern is that his willpower is so strong that on some level, even though he's possessed, he's fighting it. So the ring would theoretically...
Okay.
At least in my head, that's how...
I see what you're saying.
That's how I figured it out. So right, on some deeper level, Green Lantern is trying to fight it off. So the ring would still respond to that. Because his willpower is still...
All right, okay.
Some level trying to kick in.
So Justice League basically kicked their ass until He-Man kicks their ass, basically, and then Superman steps in and we get a better Superman He-Man fight here than we got in the previous comic. But
that's
an older comic, so we can kind of forgive that. I was a bit shocked at the end of this issue what happened. Do you want to get into it now?
Yeah, let's go. Right.
Pretty much in it,
by the way, I like the fact that Skeletor, just before we get there, that Superman, as soon as he crashes through the Batcave, you know, roof, which I wonder what that would do to Wayne Manor. Like, how? I mean, has anybody checked on the structural?
Maybe that's why it looks like it is in BBS.
See, it's all connected. Netflix or not Netflix? Whatever you do. Well, yeah, it's an Easter, the other service I don't have because it's not. Yeah. Get on that. Make a deal with Netflix and let's have a DC versus Master of the Universe movie. Let's go. Come on, make it happen. I was going to say that, like, hello. Okay, I'll say that at the end of the episode.
Wasn't Batman, so why not?
I'll say that at the end of the episode. But
yeah.
Okay, so we get the fight, the battle between Superman and He-Man.
And I'd say Superman pretty much kicks his ass.
Oh, Superman was like unleashed.
And he even says, doesn't he, I'm sick of holding back and stuff. And
I love that line. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Which obviously he's possessed at this point, so he kind of he's lost all his inhibitions, hasn't he?
Right, right. And then He-Man's like, this guy is going to, if I don't stop him, he's going to kill me.
Yeah.
And not only me, but then 7 billion people are going to pay for it. And so he's talking, he's basically saying, I don't want to, because I'm not a person that likes killing, but I have to in this case. And he stabs Superman through the chest.
I'll stab him. Yeah. Yeah. It's a bigger wound than he got in BVS.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's funny. I got BVS vibes when I saw
that. Yeah. Even electricity and all that around the zone when he's
been stabbed. I'm telling you, this thing is screaming to be directed by Zack Snyder.
Yeah, so I was really shocked at this point. I mean, obviously, Superman's, if he is dead or if he's not, he's going to come back. So
yeah, spoilers.
He seems to snap the others out of their control, I assume.
Yeah.
Because they're all like, what have you just done? And Batman's like, looks like he's going to start crying. Yeah. Last panel.
Batman looks like those two girls that were sitting beside my role. In when I first saw BVS with the family, and they started crying. That's how those girls. Oh,
right. Well, when Superman died.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Didn't I tell you this story?
I don't think so.
Did I see this story on the last episode? Yeah. So I basically I don't know, but I'll say it again. Anyway, so I went to watch BVS the Thursday night showing with a couple of buddies, and then it was Easter weekend, so. After we had our family meal, I said, you guys want to go watch BVS? So I took the whole family. And so we had like half a roll. And then at the end of that roll, there were two girls. So when Superman dies, and the movie ends and, you know, the whole nine yards, as the lights are coming up, like these two girls are, they must have been 15, 16. Like they're sobbing, like, As if you just, you know, killed their dog.
Oh my God.
That's how much they're talking. I didn't have a chance to say anything because I wasn't close enough. But my mom turned to them and said, oh, don't worry. Superman's coming back. Justice League is next. And my mom doesn't read these comics or anything like that. But if my mom knew that Superman was coming back.
I think you have told me that, you know. I think it was a long time ago you told me that.
Yeah. So I found that pretty. I'm like, oh, good. Two thumbs up for mom for knowing that.
But it's such a great cliffhanger to end the issue on.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You literally are like, what the F is he just done? But
yeah, I mean, it's shocking because to see He-Man stab Superman, even though you
know
at some point.
What do you think to He-Man's design in this then? Because obviously he's not got the pants and, you know, he's not basically naked apart from the film. Because I was thinking in the film, I almost don't think they can't necessarily do that look. They might have to do something like this. Because this reminded me more of his look in the New Adventures of He-Man, which is not quite the same as that, but, you know, it was a bit more of a... It was a bit more covered up. So...
Yeah, well, I don't mind it. I'm not opposed to it.
No, I mean, I almost wonder when they do the new film if they should come up with something that's a mixture of both and, like... You know, because maybe it'd be better having.
I think what you'll have is probably. What I think the middle ground would be is to sort of cover up his torso area.
Yeah.
His chest area with more than just that armored plate. So like basically what he's got on up to the chest. And then you'll probably see his abs because, you know. Aquaman being shirtless worked for Aquaman, so I'm assuming they'd do the same for He-Man. You know, so I mean, some of them will be exposed because, you know, they want to show off the actors.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he's in the loincloth.
So, what do you think of the cover art for this issue?
I think it's pretty badass, and it has Skeletor's defeated everybody at that point.
Yeah.
Basically, they're all laid out and he's reigning supreme. It is a badass cover.
Yeah.
It's an absolute five. If you're asking for a rating, it's a five.
Yeah, if I went for a five again, I think I've just looked at the cover for issue three as well, and well, I won't spoil it, but that's pretty badass as well.
I think the covers are all going to get fives at this point.
Yeah, I get the feeling because the artwork is absolutely incredible. And the colouring as well, you know, you got to give credit to all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
What about the issue then? What would you rate?
Well, the issue, I'm giving this one a five.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. Yeah.
This is what my inner six-year-old would want.
It does seem like this comic arc has been made to be for a graphic novel, like to be read that way.
Yeah. Oh, it's. I will say this. It's as much as I love monthly comics. I would love the idea of reading this all at once.
Yeah.
If this was one of those Earth One graphic novels, it would be perfect.
I think that's absolutely. Yeah.
That's a perfect format for it.
I wonder if the graphic novel has the previous stories in.
I think they're sold separately. Unless they have like an omnibus.
Yeah. Which usually has.
But otherwise, I think they're separately. But I would give the story a five and the art a five. Yeah.
But yeah, for me, I mean, even though we get the first one a four, I think it's been an absolute brilliant story to read so far. So I'm looking forward to diving into the rest of that.
So we'll certainly pick this up again. Maybe not next episode, especially if we're covering if our plan comes together and we're covering what we're covering. I won't say what it is on the next episode because we might not, depending on how scheduling.
Yeah.
But if we're covering what we're supposed to be covering, then we'll resume this in 2 months' time. In two
episodes. Yeah, and I think what we're covering will take a whole episode because right then. So that's the two comics, and it's I've read three Master of the Universe comics now, including the that includes that Superman, and I've loved them all. So
yeah,
quite.
I think as we read more, you're gonna love. I think you're gonna love everything.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's going. So, should we move on to the film now, the fun film?
Let's do it, yeah.
So, you obviously mentioned this to me the other day. I'd never even heard of it. I've had to send it to our Dan, and I think he's either watched it or he's planning on watching it. There was a trailer which I watched first because I thought that'd be interesting to watch. And it's called Fall of Grayskull, and it's directed by a guy called Daniel Benedict. It is a pretty low-budget fan film, but at the same time, it's a very stylish fan film, and earlier when you were talking about that 300 comparison, I actually kept thinking, well, this has kind of got a little bit of that.
So it almost has that vibe, which I would like. Yeah. Like I said, I think with even more money behind it, I think that kind of style would work perfectly for a Masters of the
Universe. Yeah, so I'll just read out some of the cast. So the big one for me was they got Alan Oppenheimer to narrate it. And it was such a cool narration. It reminded me of the 87 film, the way it was delivered.
Yeah. And that shot of Castle Grayskull at the beginning, I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. Did he use his toy for that?
Probably.
Yeah, that was cool. So, cast anyway, so you got Brian
Cage. All I kept thinking when I saw Castle Grayskull, I was like, damn it, I had that.
Yeah.
I'm never gonna let it go.
So Brian Cage, the wrestler, he stars as He-Man / Castle Grayskull Man, which that was a toy. I actually was looking up this on YouTube, but we'll get into it when we get to it. Kevin Clark as Skeletor, Johnny Bilson as Triclops, Mercedes Varbel as Teela, John Thomas Pryor as Prince Adam. I won't name the other ones because that's kind of a spoiler for the end. But there's other ones as well, like Alexandria Hendrick as Evelyn. But I won't read any more out because there's loads and I don't want to spend all day reading the cast list.
And I think, if I remember correctly, this was crowdfunded.
It's got to have been, hasn't it? It did do updates on YouTube. I think I've seen him, so that would make sense.
Yeah. Like, it was crowdfunded, and a friend I know actually knew the director and went to the premiere.
Okay.
Like they had a screening of it. And like it was on my radar back in you know
2015
2015 when yeah. it was being made. But then by the time it came out, you know, when 2016 came around, which was when I think when it was actually finished and all that, you know, my mind was so focused on BVS that I kind of forgot about it.
Well, its budget was 20 grand instead of a lot, so.
Yeah, so which is you know, quite a, still.
Did you see the poster that did for it as well?
Did I see what?
The poster that he did for it.
Yeah, oh, the posters were great, yeah.
Yeah, it looked, reminds me of the 87 film a lot.
Yeah, so. Very Drew Struzan kind of.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I guess we could just so He-Man and Skeletor battle for control of Castle Grayskull in this fan film based on a popular 80s cartoon. So not the best synopsis, but that's pretty much what it is. It's not plot heavy.
No, I mean
it does require a little bit of knowledge of the cartoon, I believe, because there are things like Healer's mum being the sorceress, although she does call her mother, doesn't she?
Right, but the narration does give, the beautiful thing about the narration, which I think is well done, is that it gives you the basics of what you need to know.
Yeah. Now, when it started, this character, Shadow Weaver, turned up and started speaking to Teela. I was thinking, oh, is this Orko? And they've kind of done a new Orko. And I was like,
I thought that was cool. Orko too. I thought it was...
It's not. So I was like, oh, unless does Orko become Shadow Weaver or something? I was a little bit confused that
I don't remember Shadow Weaver from the cartoon. But maybe she was more of a She-Ra character?
Possibly, which would make sense with something that, you know, we'll get into later in the spoilers. Well, yeah, I suppose it's all spoilers now, isn't it?
Yeah, spoilers, haven't seen this film, by the way, it was 2016. It's on YouTube. You have no excuses. Go watch it.
So I was thinking, oh, that's quite a cool update on Orko. I'm going to just have a look who Shadow Weaver is now. You're right. Looks like she's from...
Am I right?
Homeworld Etheria. That's She-Ra, isn't it?
I know way too much about this stuff.
So even this didn't want to do Orko. So that tells you something. King Orko on movie.
Yeah.
Although if they wanted to make Orko like that, so it's like just it's almost like a person, is it?
Yeah, just make him a little dark. Not
CGI him and have him as some weird Jar Jar Binks type of thing, because that'd be terrible.
Yeah, just make him a little bit more darker. I'm not saying dark to the point of, you know.
No, but I think we talked about this. Because I think this does lean on that. Obviously, it does kind of it goes quite dark, doesn't it? Really, let's face it. Yeah. Even though obviously it still is a little bit, you know, corny and cheesy like the cartoon was, which I believe was intentional. I don't think the intention.
Yeah, no, you have to.
Yeah, I don't think that just happened because acting wasn't great and stuff. I think it was intentionally done a certain way. But it was very dark. The story was really dark.
Yeah, I find it. What's interesting is that in this film, something happens that never happened in the cartoon. Skeletor won.
Yeah. Basically, well, we could say he kills him. Kills like him.
He's captured Castle Grayskull. He's in control. I mean, He-Man's in handcuffs for a good portion of the...
Yeah. This is pretty much like, you know, obviously Kevin Smith was getting crap for. This is pretty much Teela's film, this.
Yeah, but also, it kind of makes sense with what Kevin Smith is describing as his cartoon, which is, you know, they've lost.
Yeah. And it works. It really works.
Yeah.
So basically, I like that Prince Adam and He-Man were two actors as well, because I think that was quite a clever way of doing
it's funny because as I was watching, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. How would they pull this off in the actual, you know, the studio finance, big budget?
Yeah.
Like, are they going to, assuming that Noah Centineo is still He-Man, are they going to have him also play Adam, or is somebody else going to play Adam?
Yeah, this is the thing for me, and I'm almost like, I think it might be better if it is two actors, because if they look alike, you're going to have that question out here. Oh, well, why does nobody recognize him? Obviously, you can, if they explain it in film and say, oh, magic, fair enough. But it's one of them, isn't it, where I think there's probably two ways of doing it, and one is to get. I mean, I'd almost. I don't. This is what I don't get right, because in the cartoon, he looks as buff as he does as He-Man in his, which I never got. I never got why, but he looks as buff as he does as He-Man in the pink.
Yeah, clothing. The only difference is the clothing.
Yeah, which maybe that was a cheaper animation thing because the animation cells and stuff. But
the voice.
In the 2002 cartoon, he's clearly a younger man who turns into an older.
Yeah, it's like the Shazam.
He's basically like, he starts off as Spike Dudley and he becomes John Cena.
But it's kind of like Shazam too, right?
Yeah, it's very much like Shazam, yeah.
Right? In that sense.
So, but yeah, I liked that about it anyway. So He-Man basically gets killed, and that's what Taylor's
killed is the...
Well, I think he pretty much is dead.
He's drained of the power. Well, technically Prince Adam is dead. Yeah, okay, he's dead.
Yeah. Go home, kids, you've lost. And then you've got... because it's almost like when he dies, Castle Grayskull, like, erupts and it can't handle the fact that he's dead, and then you get this Castle Grayskull man who's a skeleton-looking He-Man.
Right.
24 or something like that. Now, I've seen the toy of this, so I was thinking, did they base it off the toy, or was the toy ever part of anything else, like a comic, or do you know of anything like that? Or
that I'm not sure, because I know you're right. I've seen the toy, but I don't remember seeing the character.
Yeah. Or did the toy come after this? That's another thing I was thinking in my head. I need to have a look, a proper research of that.
That would be interesting, yeah.
Because... I assume this is a sort of thing that's got a bit of a fan following, the way it is, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
We also get quite a dive into Teela's backstory, don't you, with...
Well, yeah, you're right. You said it was, you know, this is very much Teela's story, and it's true. Because in the flashback, it shows Teela training in, you know, in archery, which is, you know, she could give Oliver Queen a run for his money. But it's very between that, the conversations with her mother, you know, she's an integral part of the final battle leading up to the final battle. So
yeah,
it very much is Teela's story.
Are you ready for the answer, by the way?
Yeah.
So Castle Grayskull Man was created by Daniel Benedict, who did this, and the figure we've seen is one that somebody won, the created one figure, which I assume they probably used in the film for some shots.
So it is for the yeah.
Yeah, so that's quite cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I thought it was a cool concept, though, because it was almost like the spirit of He-Man was part of the castle and stuff. And
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept. I really dig it. Like I said, it makes sense that if He-Man is the protector of, you know, Eternia and Castle Grayskull, that if he were to perish, then the magic and the aura within the castle would start shedding down.
Yeah. It's very cool, like concept around that aspect of it.
Yeah.
But he obviously. It's almost like he becomes alive to bring Prince Adam and He-Man back, not necessarily to defeat Skeletor, which I'm almost like, he could have probably squashed Skeletor if he wanted to, but...
Yeah, but that takes the fun of He-Man doing it.
Yeah, of course it does,
So yeah, he's almost like, the equivalent would be, wasn't the Eradicator's purpose to bring Superman back to life?
That's actually a good.
So it's essentially that kind of.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that kind of deal.
That's a good comparison, actually. So, I was thinking, what Skeletor looked cool, didn't he? As well, it was really impressive his design. I thought. it was kind of a scarier looking, and it was a bit scarier looking than the cartoon, wasn't it?
Skeletor? Yeah.
Yeah. And he still had the colorful.
They were muted, like the colors were a little bit muted. But also, you didn't see Skeletor doing, like, the actor that played Skeletor didn't do the exact same laugh as Alan Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that kind of laugh. Yeah,
I'm a little bit sad that he didn't call, you know, what was it, Triclops, was it?
Isn't it called? Triclops. Sorry, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. He didn't call the, you know, Triclops or Evelina Boo, because, you know, I like me. He uses.
I really like Triclops in this, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got his head blown off. Pretty much.
That was kind of gruesome.
Yeah, weird to see when they filmed it though. Like, it looked like he was in a gimp.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the behind the scenes stuff. It was pretty cool. But yeah, that was like taken right out of a horror movie, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But it was just, it was so cool. I was just really impressed with this film, to be honest. I wasn't expecting to be as hooked as I was, and before I knew it was over, I was like, oh, because it's like, it's not very long, is it? Is it like,
it's like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I really like I said, I think I'm very impressed that they found somebody that is the almost, I think he's actually bigger than, but that could be the size that you see of He-Man in the cartoon.
Yeah.
That's impressive. And the only way you do that is if you get a bodybuilder or a wrestler. The only way you come close to those proportions is that.
All right. Did you watch the making of as well as the gag reel and stuff?
Yeah.
I like the way the director was telling him to say, I have the power and stuff. Like, he was proper. The director was so excited. You could tell, like, it was excitement and enthusiasm.
That's how you know the director's a fan of the material.
But then part of me's thinking, this guy should probably get a shot to do a big budget live action film, because if he could do something like this for 20 grand.
Yeah, if I'm Mattel, Sony, and Netflix, I'm watching this thinking, wait a minute, we've been sitting here for how many years trying to get this thing off the ground?
Yeah,
you know, and this guy comes in, gets a crowdfunded thing, and does this with the utmost respect and, you know, gratitude to the property. Yeah. Like, give him some sort of position on the big budget film, I would think.
Because he's obviously got a passion for it.
Yeah, and you could just see it in those behind the scenes things where, you know, he wants to make sure that he's doing right by the property and by the fans. Like, you could tell there's a love there. It would be like, you know, I don't know the first thing about directing. I mean, you know more than I do, obviously, but it'd be like one of us.
Not that much.
There. What's that?
I said, not that, I don't know that much. So.
No, but you know more. You're in a better spot than I am. But it'd be like one of us there, right? He's representative of the fandom, and I.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, I don't understand why. Now, to be fair, it seems like Adam and Aaron Nee are big fans of the property too. So.
Yeah, that's not, I'm not taking it away from them, but I'm saying, you know, if he just wants to do one, and then you want to do, or even. I actually am starting to think, you know, you could do a series, like a live action series. You know, we're talking about
I don't understand how Netflix, if Netflix is really taking control of the film, which is a prevailing theory.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have now hear me out on this. A little sidebar from the live action or the fan film here. If Netflix is looking across the street and sees, all right, Disney Plus has The Mandalorian and about five other Star Wars series lined up.
Mm.
You know, the HBO Max is going to have Zack Snyder's Justice League. And we have what? The Umbrella Academy? Big effing deal. and I like the Umbrella Academy, but big effing deal. So my thing is, yeah, you could put out, like, you can make a movie. Like, Netflix could finance the movie. But wouldn't you get more bang for your buck if you made a series? And it's doable, because...
Yeah, and you see it like something like The Witcher, where they've leaned into those fantasy elements. Right. And the world of Master of the Universe, the scope and the exploration, I mean, you could potentially even have, like, spin-offs like She-Ra, and you could even do, like, there's just so much potential in this
property. But if they can do, that's what we're saying, if they can do The Witcher as a series.
Yeah.
Why can't you do He-Man as a series?
Well, big one as well, Game of Thrones. Look, if you made Game of Thrones, but it's He-Man, that would be unbelievable. I mean, obviously, maybe you're not going to get as a wider of audience.
I mean, you can't have the nudity or the sex, but
well, you could, but you probably shouldn't.
Well, yeah. Like, hey kids, you want to watch it? All right, here we go.
Right, well, make the film for family friendly, and we'll have the nudity in the series. So, I keep thinking now, series seems to be like a big, I mean, we're talking about the, you know, what's happened with COVID and stuff, and how look at bloody Warner Brothers, they keep holding off on Wonder Woman 84 and they want to get it in cinema, but they might have to come a point where they might have to be like, we're gonna have to just put it on streaming or, you know, purchase online. This to me says the modern world is kind of maybe going leaning more towards the streaming aspects, and this kind of thing made me think about, well, imagine this is a series, because this feels like the final chapter, of a series. So I'm like, if this was your last episode, and because let's just get it out there right now, right? He-Man kills Skeletor at the end.
Yeah.
Which I kind of liked, because he's like,
in a very relatively nice way.
Yeah, yeah. But he basically says, doesn't he, how many people, you know, am I going to let die by letting you live? And I like that, because... For me, I mean, a lot. Batman and the Snap Joker's neck. First time he met him.
He-Man does what Batman won't.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Batman should kill the Joker, and I want him to, but I'm just saying, you know, you do sometimes think, don't you? But it's so much easier if you just killed this guy.
Yeah.
And He-Man's just like, basically at the end, he's like, "Look, if I let you leave, you're going to kill more people." He just wipes him out, doesn't he? Which with the power of this, he basically does to Skeletor what he did to him, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So it's very, it's not like he guts him. It's very, the way it's done is very, you know.
He doesn't stab him back and go, now fly. Like, Lex Luthor to Superman. Try laughing now.
It's a very kid-friendly way to kill the guy, so that, you know, kids aren't going to get, you know, crap their pants in fear.
Can you imagine if we had like a series and this was like, there was like five seasons and this was the last season or something, this was the last, that'd be such a badass ending.
Now you've got my mind going there, and I'm thinking to myself, is this why it's taking so long to hear anything about the movie? Have they decided, why don't we just turn this into a series?
Well, like I said, the risk now to film, considering we don't know what, if you're going to make a bit of money in cinemas, they're going to look at more avenues like this, aren't they?
Like, I would think if I'm Netflix and we have, okay, so we have two Masters of the Universe series coming out, animated. Why not add with a live action series? So maybe if the rumor is that they're buying it from, or if the reports are true, where they're gonna take, or Sony's gonna sell it to Netflix.
Hmm.
Could that sale have already happened? And now the discussions are, why don't we turn this into a series?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be wishful thinking on my part, but it's also possible that those discussions are happening.
You know, and if they're going with a real plan, and they say, right, this is our 4 or 5 season arc, and we want to get to this point, you know, there's no reason it can't blow our socks off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, so we'll see what happens. But whatever they're doing, I would recommend hiring
this guy.
What's his name? I want to.
Daniel
Benedict. I think he's done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Like, he's done something that, until I'm proven otherwise, two Hollywood studios have not been able to do properly.
No. Well, if you're going to... Are you talking about
I love the 87 film, okay? I adore it. You know, it's still a favorite of mine, even though, you know, but...
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't able to deep dive the way this guy was. You know, into the mythology as much as he was. The only thing missing from this movie is Cringer. Really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Didn't really miss him much.
I did. I wanted to see Battlecat. What do you got against
Battlecat? I'm kind of like...
What do you got against Battlecat? You're an anti...
Right. Put it this way, right? If he's not in the film that they're doing, or a series they do, I don't think I'd lose any sleep. I'll just put it that way.
It would bother me because, look, I didn't get him in the 87 movie. He wasn't here.
Well, do you wonder if he got Guldar? Was it enough?
No, it's not enough. I want Cringer because Steven needs to be represented on film properly.
And I want to be on film, whatever.
And I want the Battle Cat, damn it, because he's so friggin' badass looking.
He'd be cool. If I don't get Orko, though, I couldn't give two shits.
Oh, I don't give a rat's ass about Orko.
Now, the end of the film, they kind of went into... That's when they went into the cartoon cheesy territories, isn't it, where he's kind of flirting with Teela and...
Yeah, but I liked it. I'm like, hey...
I liked it too. I get the feeling he's getting lucky that night. I'll just put it that way.
Well, I mean... for his sake, I hope so.
But... have you got anything else to say about the film?
My thing is, I really, like I said, visually I thought it was stunning. They had a fairly sizable budget for a film, you know, of this nature, crowdfunded and all that jazz. And I think that they brought the world of Eternia to life in the best possible way they could. And I think all the money they had at their disposal was on the screen. The opening shots with the narration and the Castle Grayskull that were beautiful. I love the look of Skeletor. In some cases you think certain aspects were cheesy, but I think it's more in the sense that they stay true to the original. They try to stay as true to the original cartoon. And with that, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get elements of that. And there's nothing wrong. It just is what it is.
I'm not knocking it for that, I'm saying in a way they kind of blended the adult world with the kids' cartoon world.
And I think that was purposeful. I think that was purposeful.
I do too, yeah.
I loved how they approached the sorceress and how they were able to put her on screen, and also how they delved into Teela's backstory. I really did like that because, like I said at the top of the show, the Masters of the Universe brand was very good about highlighting strong, powerful, independent women.
Yeah.
And I think... Making Teela the center of the story, is in keeping with what the cartoon did in terms of making a strong character, but also furthering it because we get more of Teela's backstory. I think here a little bit, it's a little bit more fleshed out, and she becomes, whereas the cartoon, Teela's a strong character, but He-Man is a star. Whereas here, she's a strong character, and she's really at the forefront of the film.
Yeah, it's like she's the heart of the film, isn't she?
We
follow her journey.
And I gotta give extra credit to both to the actress that played Teela, and to the actor. The actress was Mercedes. How do you pronounce her last name?
Oh, hang on. I've gone off IMDb now.
I don't want to do it wrong.
Varbella, I assume. That's how I've...
yeah, Mercedes Varbella as Tina. Yeah. I think she was a standout in the film, as was the actor who played Skeletor. He was...
Kevin Clark, yeah, he was. Kevin Clark, I thought Johnny Bilson as Tricops was good as well. He was good too. He brought that hamminess.
I think everybody gave performances that respected and honored what came in the cartoon, and I really.
Yeah,
I just think that Tila and Skeletor were able to go a little bit further because their stories sort of were either enhanced or they were enhanced in Tila's case, like her role.
Yeah.
And in Skeletor's case, he actually won this time. So he was allowed to take it in a little bit different direction.
Yeah. And I think going out of Brian Cage's He-Man, because He-Man isn't a very layered character because he's two characters, he's Prince Adam and He-Man. So what we got was we basically just got He-Man we like say from the cartoon that we know.
Yeah.
And he almost is a bit of a dumb brute in some respects. He's not dumb, but he comes across like a punchy before you.
Yeah, he's very straightforward. He
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. That's not a knock, that's just who the character is. I mean,
yeah, he's more of a punch you first and then I'll ask questions.
Yeah. And He-Man is the kind of character that he can be like that because of his supporting characters.
Yeah.
It works. I do want to give a call out to Louisa Torres, a Shadow Weaver, though, because I love I don't know if that was an actual language she spoke or if it was just something they made up, but I kind of like that she didn't speak English like the others, but then they knew what she was saying. I kind of liked that.
Yeah.
That was cool. I really enjoyed it. I met independent films myself, so I know how hard it is and stuff, but I also know how hard they can be to watch when you watch independent films sometimes. And you do kind of, when any independent film starts, you kind of have that feeling of, well, is this going to be any good? And after a couple of minutes, I was just hooked on this.
I was fully invested in them.
And I watched the trailer before to kind of catch the mood of what it was, and I was blown away by the trailer as well. So
I was so happy that I remembered that this was a thing, and that I found it and was able to finally watch it.
Oh my god, you told me about it. So
I was so happy to have found something like this that again is respectful of the thing that I grew up loving.
Yeah,
and takes the story to a place that, to this point, I've never seen it taken. So it's respectful. It honors, but it moves the story forward, and I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, it almost works as an ending, doesn't it? If you think about it.
Like, think about it. You could go into Kevin Smith's cartoon, provided that his animated series, you know, if it sticks to what it says, which is, you know, they've lost and now they've got to pick up.
Yeah.
You could literally almost, from that premise, this could work in the world of Kevin Smith's cartoon.
Yeah. And think about it, you can bring Skeletor back. You can bring Skeletor back.
Of course you can.
So do you want to talk about the mid-credits?
Yeah.
So straight away, I knew what it was. I knew who it was. And Shadow Weaver obviously is a little bit dodgy.
Yeah.
And she goes to speak to Hordak, which you don't see his face though, do you? You just see his arm, don't you? Now, I thought that was cool, and I knew what it was straight away. And obviously, as soon as you see Adora, she's dressed like Adora dresses in the cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I knew it all straight away, and I felt like it's one of them where maybe if you didn't know He-Man, although you probably wouldn't have watched it if you didn't know He-Man,
right,
you probably would be like, who the hell's this? But knowing it, you know exactly what it is, and it's kind of setting up another one, isn't it? So you kind of wanted to make another one now where He-Man and She-Ra meet and they have to take down Hordak and stuff, so that'd be quite cool. But
yeah, I don't know if there are plans, but I wish there were. Please, if you're listening to this, do another crowdfunding campaign and make the She-Ra movie.
Yeah, and I'll chip in this time. So I didn't know that one.
Right. Now that I will put what I can. I'll put it out there. You know.
Yeah.
We'll, but I would love to see it. I think, like I said, great job by all involved, from director to cast to the rest of the crew. You did a wonderful job. You did this property proud, and you left me wanting more. And that's when you're dealing with a franchise and genre like this. If you can leave me wanting more of the world you've created, you've done a great job. So well done, and please consider creating another Kickstarter for a Shira. I'd watch it.
And if Skeletor didn't die,
I'd support it.
Yeah, if Skeletor didn't die, you probably could just go straight from this to Secret of the Sword. So.
Yeah, but you can always, like you said, there's ways to bring him back.
Yeah. So something I wanted to mention about the end, they did like a song for the film on the end credits.
Yeah.
It might have been the Ultimate Warriors music. Like, when you listen to it, it sounds like the Ultimate Warriors, and I kept thinking of the Ultimate Warriors.
I'll have to listen back.
Yeah, the end credits were so well done, like with the pictures of them and kids and stuff. I thought that was a really nice touch, and I really enjoyed that aspect of the credit. Yeah, I always think of stylish credits.
What's that?
I like Aquaman. I like stylish credits. I like it when they put stuff in.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I do like to see, especially if it's got like a good song on it or something. I want to, like in this case, when I was trying to find out what the actors were, and then I thought to myself, oh, why don't I just look on IMDb? But my overall thoughts are, I thought it was brilliantly done. I think you can't rate this against a big budget feature film. You've got to kind of rate it as its own thing.
Yeah,
it was such a good effort. I was blown away, to be honest. I thought you can. I think the biggest thing I'll take away from it is you can tell it's been with a lot of love for the franchise.
Absolutely, 100%.
And as soon as you've got that, and some do with that passion, you're gonna always get something at least watchable.
Like I said, I think you can tell that the people involved are part of this fandom, like I said, I think this is you know, it's a fun watch. It reignites nostalgia, and it leaves me wanting more. It does everything that you could ask. I mean, I wish it was longer. I can say that. I want more of it. but, you know, also the runtime is kind of on par with what we would get in the cartoon. So
That's a good point, actually, yeah. In fact, you get a lot more layers. Some of the episodes of the cartoon are more layered than I ever thought, but you get a lot more layers in 30 minutes here than you got in the cartoon episode.
Of course, yeah. So, well done. You know, maybe I don't know if we should have thought about this before, but I would love to have a chat with the director, if that would be possible.
Well, he's on Twitter, so could try.
Well, we might have to put a couple of feelers out, see if he'd come talk about the experience with us. And maybe
that would be really good, actually, because
maybe we can twist his arm and say, you know, give us that shooter move. Let's go. What do we have to do to make it happen?
So we always rate films with a letter grade. So I think we should letter grade this one as well.
All right. Well, you're a cringer, so you go first.
I don't want to go first, you man.
Too bad.
Right. And again, I'm ranking it as an independent fan film. I'm gonna give it a solid A because I was just that impressed with it. You know, I feel like obviously if you were rating this against a feature film, you'd have to rate it differently, but you have to kind of rate things within what they are. Like I've said to you before, like if I rated a horror film that I love, I could give something like that an A+. But if I rated that against like Jaws or something, or you know, Back to the Future, I'd probably rate they'd probably be that I'd consider some higher graded movies in terms of the hierarchy of film, but you can only rate it against what it is. So as far as independent films go, and I've seen a lot, this is one of the best ones I've ever seen of a fan, any fan film of anything. So I'm going to give it an A.
Yeah, and look, here's my position. I don't have to give any justification for why I'm grading it the way I'm grading it. I don't have to compare it to anything else. I can just give you the rating the way I want to give the rating, because it's my show and I'll do it how I want. And with all that being said, I'm going to give it an A. And if you don't like that grade, don't be a boob and confront me on it, because I'll banish you like Skeletor with Beastman. How about that? So it's an A from me, an unqualified A. From the first minute of the film to the last.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I guess that wraps it. Yeah.
This was a fun one. We got a lot in with the you know we thought two comic books and a short film, but we always managed to fill the time even though we had no news. So.
We don't need news.
but it's always fun. You know what it is when you enjoy the subject matter and you enjoy the people you're talking with, it makes a big difference. So that's probably why we can keep on doing this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But we hope you enjoyed the episode as listeners, and we encourage you that if you haven't read the two comics that we talked about today, and you're a fan of Masters of the Universe or the DC Universe or both, like any sane human being would be, we urge you to either head over to your local comic book shop or to Amazon or to Comixology, which is owned by Amazon. So I'm giving them more than one plug. So, you know, be that what it may. Amazon, send me a free gift card, damn it. No, I'm kidding. but we urge you to pick up the book in whatever format you consume your comics. But pay for it.
I recommend digital.
But pay for it.
I think I'm going digital now, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know Ryan would oppose digital, but he likes physical stuff. So, but whatever way you're supporting the product, buy it because it deserves your money. It's that good. And also, if you haven't seen Fall of Grayskull, watch it. Do yourself a favor. As a fan of this property, you have to watch. It's a must watch. So do that. But we hope you enjoy them. If you take our recommendations, then we hope you do. But we will be back with you next time. In the meantime, you can always talk to us about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe via social media. So Stephen, if they want to talk to you about He-Man, where do they do that?
You can do that on Twitter at SteveBob1984. And if you want to follow the page for the show and our other podcasts and Adam's other podcasts, he's got like a million. Yeah. You can you can follow at MMNPDC.
Awesome. And if you want to follow me directly, you can do that at Adam_LeesFan on Twitter. Or we also have a Facebook group, the Multiverse Musings podcast network Facebook page. That's a mouthful. Go there and request admittance into the group, and any one of my other co-hosts or myself, except for Steven, will add you, because Steven's not on Facebook, so one of us will add you there, and we can continue the conversation there. And if you have messages for Steven regarding He-Man via Facebook, leave them there and I will pass them along to him. So if you want him to call, if you want to call him a nincompoop or any other any other Skeletor insult, send them over there and I'll pass them over to him on the next show.
Thanks, I think.
But until next time, I want you to remember that we all have the power, and remember that Skeletor and all his villainy is forever. From the first time he failed to get into Castle Grayskull to the last. So long, everybody.
Good journey.
Skeletor. It's over.
Yes. For you.
By the power of Grayskull.